We're looking at the Mishnah on Daf Tzadi Omid Aleph, towards the bottom of the Omud. And we're learning the dinim of Boshes, and when are you chai for Boshes, and how much you have to pay. Hatokea l'chavero nosein lo sela. According to the Tanakama, if a person blows, and here Rashi has two interpretations of what this means. Rashi says, Hatokea l'chavero hiko al ozno loshen mori. In the name of his Rebbe, he says that he smacked him over the ear. That's quite humiliating. L'shnachrina tokea mamish, that he was blowing into his ear with an instrument. And that itself is embarrassing. Nosein lo sela, how much does he have to pay for boshas? And the Mishnah establishes a sela. And we've discussed in the past that a sela is equal to 4 zuzim. And the Mishnah seems to assume that we're talking about a standard, or the Morim of Rashi, or the Mor of Rashi, was of the opinion that the word tkiyah here in this Mishnah is referring to a hakah, a smack over the ear. And the Rambam in Pirush Mishnayis also seems to go along that line. He says, Hiko bepas yodo, he hit him with the palm of his hand. Shehi skura, meaning a fist, alpanov, on his face. Rashi in Masechet Bechoros quotes his Mora, and he brings a support text from Mishlei Chof Beis. There it says, Altahi betoke or besoke kaf, which means makim bekapam al chavrehem. So we see that the word tekiah could mean hakah, you know, to give a smack. Now, in terms of sela, which is Dmei Boshes, the Mishnah assumes that there's a standard uniform price. You know, you can make a table, you know, for how much you have to pay in which particular Maise Boshes, in which particular actions that cause humiliation. And Rashi is of the opinion that although there may be other additional payments like Tzar, Ripui, and Shevis that he has to pay, here our Mishnah is addressing the Tashlum that you pay for Boshes, which is separate and in addition to any other payments you have to pay. The Rif and the Rambam, on the other hand, write that this is a Schum Kotzuv, a set price, De Mishalim Oso Af Al Shar Dvarim. In other words, the price that's listed here as payment for compensation in Chovel includes Tzar, Ripui, and Sheves in addition to Boshes. It's all one lump sum that covers everything. The Meiri is of the opinion, in the name of the Yesh Mefarshim, that the only time he's chayev for Tokea is if he holds on to the person with his hand. If there's no contact between the Mevayesh and the Mizbayesh, meaning between the one who's blowing or banging and his victim, then there's no Chiv Boshes at all. The Meiri himself rejects this Yesh Mefarshim, and he holds that even without Negia, there still is a Maise Boshes which incurs a Chiv payment. Rabbi Yehuda Ben Mishum, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Mona. Mona means that the payment is 100 zuz. The ratio here between the sela of the Tanakama and the mona of Rabbi Yossi Aglili is 1 to 25. In other words, if a sela is 4 zuz, you'd have to multiply a sela 25 times over to reach a mona, which is 100 zuz. And in that context, the question arises, how could there be such an extreme gap between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi Aglili? Of 25 times the amount. And the answer that's offered here by Rabbeinu Tam, by the Muki Yosef and other Rishonim, is that the Tanakhama is talking about a case where the Mizbayesh was a lower status, a lower echelon in the society. He's an Ani. He doesn't suffer that great embarrassment, whereas Rabbi Yehuda is addressing the case of an Ashir, a rich person, and we'll see in just a minute that the Mishnah establishes a principle, HaKol Lefi Chvodo Shel HaMizbayish. As opposed to Rabbi Akiva has a uniform boshes for everyone, whether you're an Ani or an Ashir, but the first part of the Mishnah, which culminates with the klal of HaKol Lefi Chvodo, that sets up the relative payment of boshes. So in that sense, according to these Rishonim, there's no machlokas whatsoever between Rabbi Yossi Aglil and Tanakama. They're simply addressing two different cases, and therefore two different chiyuvim of boshes. Then the Mishnah goes on to say that how did he hit the other person? Sitaro, he slapped him on his cheek, alechio. If you take a look two lines before the end of Rashi, he says alalechi. Lechi is that part of the cheek that's right near the cheekbones. And that's a real embarrassment. Is no saying lo masayim zuz. He has to pay 200 zuz of boshes, which is double what we saw in Rabbi Yossi Aglili. However, now the Mishnah gives an entire list of cases where you chayev arba meozuz. And it begins with the case of li'achar yodo. In other words, instead of using the palm of his hand to slap someone, which is the normal kind of slap, he used the back part, or you could call it the front part of his hand, that's this part, and he slapped him. That's an even greater boshes, and we end up with paying 400 zuz in that case. Again, we started the Mishnah by saying that he hit him in the ear. Then we said he hit him in the face. He slapped him in the face. Slapping him in the face is double hitting him in the ear, even in the case of an Ashir, and jumps from 100 zuz to 200 zuz. But that's only if he hit him, if he slapped him in his face in the normal way of doing it, like a forehand, I guess you'd call it, by using the calf, the inside of his hand, the palm of his hand. But if he does it the other way around, hitting him as it were with the front of his hand, then we take the 200 zuz and double it, and it jacks it up to 400 zuz. That's an amazing amount of money. And the Mishnah now lists other cases where the humiliation is so great that it incurs a payment of 400 zuz. Tsoram bi'ozno. Rashi says moshach, which means he pulls his friend's ear. He pulls him by the ear. Next case, tolash bisaro. He pulls him by ripping at his hair, by pulling his hair. Rokak v'igia boruko. He spits, and the spit actually hits the body of the victim. Heavier talis bimenu, he strips him of his beged, of his clothing. Para rosh ha'isha b'shuk, he exposes the covered hair of a woman in public. In all these cases, notzein lo arba meozuz. The payment is going to be 400 zuz. I have here a note in the name of the Achronim. Why were the Chacham so machmir in these cases of boshes as opposed to the other cases of boshes? And the answer is that boshes pogas gam b'nishmaso. We're talking not about the exterior of a person, but we're talking about the sensitivity of a person, his neshama, his soul, his psychological well-being. That all is very much harmed by these acts of boshes. The Mishnah continues here on the top of Daf Tzadi Amud Beis. Zeh klal hakol lefi chvodo. Everything is, or the tashlumei boshes is a reflection of the dignity of the mizbayesh, and therefore it's a sliding scale. If it's a person who's an ashir, there's going to be a greater amount of boshes. He's more mechubad, and perhaps, you know, more sensitive to boshes, as opposed to a person who lives on a lower level. You know, his whole psyche is kind of down. He's an ani, and there his kavod is not on that high level. But again, establishing with this klal that there is a relativity theory in Boshes, Omar Rabbi Akiva responds and rejects all the Tanoim that we discussed until now. There's no relativity theory. There's no Akol Lufi Kvod Lufi Dargas HaMizbaish, but rather Kulam Shavim Bekach. They're all equal. There's a uniform payment. Afilu Aniyim Shebi Yisrael. Those are the most poor people in Israel. We don't see them as Aniyim, as extremely destitute individuals, and therefore we lower the price of Boshes. No. Rom Osom Ki Ilu Heim B'nei Chorin. We view them as if they were free, and they were outstanding citizens in the higher echelons of society. They were nichbodim, they were shirim, sheyardim, nichseihem, even though now they don't have much money, if any money at all, in the bank account, but nevertheless, they still have that sensitivity, that kavod, that self-dignity and self-worth, as if they were wealthy people, even though in actuality they don't have that money. And the Yisoda, Yisodas of Rabbi Akiva is Shehem, B'nei Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. We're all made of the same stuff. We all descend from the same greats, the same giants, whether we're Aniyim or Ashirim. And therefore, they all have the right to receive the same punishment, the same payment for Boshes. There's no sliding scale. Now the Mishnah continues by telling us a story. Maisa b'echad shepara rosha isha b'shuk. Ubas lifnei Rabbi Akiva v'chivo liten lo arba meo zuz. So the story happened, which Rabbi Akiva was the posek, and he handed down the verdict, which reflects what we just learned in our Mishnah, namely that this act of exposing a woman's hair in public is a great act of Boshes. It's a very high level, intense, profound humiliation, and it occurs a payment of damages to the tune of 400 zuz. Now, the Mevayesh turns to Rabbi Akiva. He says, Omalo Rebbe, tein li zman. Can you give me an extension of time until I can gather the funds to pay 400 zuz? It's an enormous sum. V'nasna, Rabbi Akiva granted him zmani ad shishalim until he would pay it up. And all this was a kind of a chachma, an arma, ploy. He wanted to use that time to try to come back to Rabbi Akiva and demonstrate that this penalty of 400 zuz was exaggerated. So what did he do? He wanted to demonstrate that in this woman's mind or psyche, this was not a tremendous boshes to expose her hair. So what did he do? He went shmara and he waited outside this woman's house until he saw her omedes al pesach chatzera. She was lingering, she was standing on the opening of her courtyard, at the gateway to her courtyard. V'shiber es hakad bifanel. He had in his hands a jug that was full of ubo ki'isar shemen, full of oil, and the oil in the volume of oil in that barrel was worth an isar, which is a coin. We saw it at the beginning of Kiddushin, the Isar Italki. It's valuable, but it's not what we call in modern Hebrew hon tofot. It's not worth who knows what. Now, what did she do? You know, she wants to now see if she can gain the shemen, collect it for herself. You know, whenever you see something that's going hefker, you want to jump in and grab it for yourself if it's got some value for you. Again, on the market, this is not valued much. What does she do? The only way she could possibly gather up and save this shemen is by having her hair absorb the shemen, and later on she'll squeeze out her hair. So Gilses Rosha, she's already at the Pesach of a Chatzah where she can be seen by anyone. and she exposes her hair, vaisametapachas, and she takes with her hand the shemen and pushes it onto her hair, manachas yodal rosha, with her hand full of this oil, she places it on top of her head, on her hair, in such a way that the hair would now absorb the shemen, and then she's going to use the hair as a transport and squeeze out her hair back in our house so that she can gain this shemen. And for that, to gain an isar's worth of shemen, she's willing, she has no inhibitions, no compunctions, she's willing to expose her hair publicly in order to do so. The Meiri has a pshat here in the name of Yesh Mefarshim. He doesn't necessarily adopt this pshat, that this kad and shemen were hers, and she was upset, and in a state of anguish, perhaps she was already losing it, she broke this kad, and then she realized, oh no, I'm losing this valuable amount of shemen. Hemid Aleha Edim, he made sure that there were witnesses who could testify exactly what they saw. Ubal ifne Rabbi Akiva, he brought the witnesses in front of Rabbi Akiva, and they reported, they told the story. And Lechor, at this point, he, the Mevayesh, is really making a very good point. You know, like, how can you charge me 400 zuz? She's willing for an isar, which is a pittance, to expose her hair. Obviously, the boshes level is not that high, not that profound. But nevertheless, Omar Lo, Rabbi Akiva responds to him, Lazo ani nosein arba mio zuz. And we're going to see from the next line in the Mishnah that the Omar Lo could not possibly be Rabbi Akiva's argument, because Rabbi Akiva is about to respond. It must be Omar Lo. This is a hemshech of Ubal ifnei Rabbi Akiva. This person came from Rabbi Akiva, the Omar Lo, and he said to Rabbi Akiva, Lizo ani nosein arba mio zuz. You want me to give her 400 zuz as the May Boshes? She herself was not embarrassed. She was so stingy, and she was willing to expose her hair and do so simply for an isar. She's obviously not embarrassed about exposing her hair. So why can you charge me? How can you penalize me 400 zuz? Amar lo, lo amarta klum. Your argument is not worth a dime, so to speak. In other words, according to Rabbi Akiva, there's no subjective evaluation of Dmei Boshes. It's rather uniform for all. You know, one size fits all, one price fits all. I'm not going to evaluate the Dmei Boshes by reflecting the level of the Mizbayesh, but rather we're going to look at Klal Yisrael, and we're going to determine that every individual has the same rights to the exact sum of Boshes that was set universally, objectively, for all members of Klal Yisrael. And even if she herself, as you demonstrated, is a bozui and a pachus, bioser, you know, she's willing to be embarrassing herself to a greater extent. The Meiri says, according to one pshat, she was a shota, but nevertheless, she's included in the same identical tashlume, Boshes as anyone else. And that again reflects Rabbi Akiva's position of Rohan Osam, etc., Heim B'nei Avram, Yitzchak, V'Yakov. The Mishnah now goes on, and we're going to come back to this question in a moment. The next piece in the Mishnah, is it a continuation of the story about Rabbi Akiva and the Porea, Rosh HaYish HaBashuk, or is it a separate, independent piece? And a lot of it depends upon the next word, exactly what the text is. We have hachovel biatzma, which sounds like it's introducing a new scenario, a new rule and law, but others have the girsa of shehachovel biatzmo, and that seems to be the girsa of some of the mefarshim on the Mishnayis. And the Meiri actually quotes such a girsa of shehachovel, and the sheh, the shin that you're adding here, means the hemsheikh. This is a continuation of Rabbi Akiva's response to the Porea. Hachovel biatzma, afal pishein rashoi, potur. Acherim shechavlu bo chayovim. What a person does to himself and self-inflicts, that doesn't engender any chiyuv. Now, again, there's a problem here because it says ein rashoi, so we have to figure out what that means. A person injures himself, what does it mean ein rashoi? And secondly, what does it mean that he's potter? I mean, if he's injuring himself, what was the hamin that he would pay? What would he pay from one pocket, one hand to the other hand? So therefore, the Gemara later on in Tzadi Aleph Amid Beis, and this is reflected here in the Teferis Yisrael of the Yochanu Boaz on Mishnayis, they interpret that the issue here of Ein Rashoi and Potur revolves around the Isur Lav of Baltashchis, where the Torah in Parshas Kedoshim, in Dvarim Chof, presents an Isur Lav to destroy, in that case, trees that have the ability to produce. That's called Hashchasas HaIlon. And in this case, where a person injures a human body, that's also a Baltashchis, perhaps not on a Doraisal level, because the Torah in Baltashchis is addressing the case of destroying Ilonos of trees, but nevertheless, at least on a Drabanan level, is an Isur Hashchasas Gufo. And therefore, Chovel Biatzmo, we're not talking about compensation here, a person doesn't compensate himself if on a self-imposed injury, but what we're talking about is the Isur Lav of Baltashchis, Ein Rashoi. He has no right. He thinks he owns his body. He doesn't own his body. HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns everything. Lashem Aretz Mlo, even his own body. He was created B'Tzelem Elokim, and he can't be Pogeg, can't be Mashchis, his goof. And therefore, if he is Chovel B'Atzmo, he violates the Lav of Lo Sashchis. However, Potur means this is not a Doraisa violation of Baltashchis, which would incur a Chiv Malkis, but rather, it's only a Derabbanon. And that's the way the Teferis Yisrael understands. And the question is there really a Hashchasa of Baltashchis with regard to a person? After all, Ein Gufo Nishchas Mamish, you know, in cases like Sheves, Tsar, and Boshes, there's no Hashchasa on the goof. The goof is not destroyed in any way. It's just pain that's suffered. You know, there's unemployment insurance that has to be paid because he can't work. There's boshes, humiliation. But where's the Isur Hashchas over here, even on a Drabbanan level? How do we envision a Bal Tashchis when a person inflicts upon himself a penalty, so to speak, or a loss of boshes, tsar, and sheves? And this is a question that occupied the minds of the Rishonim, and that school of Rishonim, which is headed up by Tosfos and the Rashba, unwilling to assume that there is a violation of Bal Tashchis here, they want to say that he is potur. Again, there was no habmini to be chayv, but this is just in contrast to the last case in the Mishnah of Achirim Chayovim. Again, if we assume it's Baltashchis, then Acherim means if someone else damages someone and cuts down his tree, for example, he violates an Isur D'oraisa Baltashchis. If somebody cuts down his own trees, then Acherim HaKotzitz Nitiyos HaFpish En Rashoi Potur, but Acherim is Chayovim. He, cutting down his own tree, is enjoined to do so under Baltashchis, but nevertheless he doesn't get Malkus because we want to assume he did it with some reasoning. You know, it wasn't just Hashchasa, he had some sort of constructive purpose in mind. But if somebody else comes in and destroys my trees, then he's Chayav. And again, that's if we assume that the word Chayav means, in the context of the ethical violation of Baltashchis, it means Chayav Malkus. The other way of saying it is that if the discussion in the Mishnah is whether or not there's a plaintiff here who has a basis for a lawsuit to force someone else, a mazik, to pay him damages, so even though had the person who's the plaintiff who's suing someone, had he done this action to his own possession, he would not be chayav, but others will be will be chayav. There is, however, a comment here, the Meiri, as we said before, the Meiri has Shehachovel, which means this is all a continuation of Rabbi Akiva's presentation before. And if that be the case, then what Rabbi Akiva is adding over here is that in the case of Boshes, even if a person is Mevayish themselves, like for example the woman who exposed her hair in order to collect the shemen in her hair, and even though she is patur, meaning there's no one who could be subject to any penalty, that stuff. But the contrast is with achirim chayovin, that someone else who's mevayish her in the same kind of boshes has to pay dmei boshes. Again, Rabbi Akiva shita that it's not akol fi chvoda, but rather afilu ani yishev Yisrael, etc., etc., bnei Avram, Yitzhak, and Yahweh, everybody pays the same amount. So you're telling me that where you have proof for the fact that she was Mevayish herself, that's irrelevant. When a person is Mevayish themselves, there's no payment, but that doesn't mean that if others are Mevayish them, they shouldn't have to pay. And therefore, I'm going to hit you with the full brunt of the law, says Rabbi Akiva, you'll have to pay the full sum of 400 zuz, which is the payment for this boshes of exposing a woman's hair publicly. The Gemara has the boiler who mana tsori tnan o mana medina tnan. Whenever the Mishnah offers a sum of money that has to be paid, for example, in the case of Tokel Chavera, you pay 100 zuz a mana. What kind of zuz are we talking about? There are two categories of zuz, of a zuz. One is called mana tsori, and the other is called mana medina. And a mana medina is a shminis of a zuz tzori. Now the ratio between a zuz tzori, which is a hefty sum, is a ratio of 1 to 8, or I should say 8 to 1 if you're going from mana tzori to mana medina. So 1/8 of a zuz tzori is a zuz medina. And again, if you multiply that by 100, you end up with a mana. So a mana is just 100 zuz. You can do the mathematics. So again, if we're dealing with a payment of boshes of mana tzori, then again, we're jacking this up by 8 times the value. And all this is indicative of the chumrah of boshes. And we'll soon see that the Gemara is going to tip the scale in favor of a mana tzuri. Toshma, Maisa Shahoyah, this is a story that happened. Ahu Gavra de Tokale Lechavre, a person hit his friend over the ear or blew something in his ear. Also Lekami de Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, and the victim now sues in a court of law which is over which Rabbi Yehuda Nasi presided. That's like one of the highest courts of the land, and he wanted to know how much the tokeh should be paying him. Amar Lei, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi responded, Ha'ana ha-Rabbi Yossi Aglili. I and Rabbi Yossi Aglili are of the same exact opinion, and we saw in our Mishnah that Rabbi Yossi Aglili says 400 zuz. A tokeh l'chavero b'yozno has to pay 400 zuz just for Dmei Boshes. Is Havle mana tzori. And Rabbi Yehuda Nasi forced him to pay not just a mana, 100 zuz, that we saw already in Rabbi Yossi, but even more than that, that the 100 zuz should be zuzei tzore. Shmamina, from this story in the Braisa, we understand mana tzore tanan. And our Mishnah, when it's referring to the various payments, is being calculated in a mana tzore, the more expensive mana. And we see here clearly from Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, because Rabbi Yehuda Nasi said that what Rabbi Yossi HaGlili said in our Mishnah, that Tokel Chaver B'Yozno Mishalim Mana, he had in mind a Mana Tzori, which is, a Mana is 100 Zuz Tzori. Shmamino, we see clearly, and this is the answer to the original Suffolk of the Gemara, that the monies and the currencies that are listed, the sums and exact amounts that are listed in our Mishnah reflect which kind of Zuz? A Zuz Sorry. Now, the relevance of this brisa of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi and the story of his being mechayev someone a full 400 zuz tzori is complete now. We've ended that part of the sugya. But once we mention this story, the Gemara has a problem here. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi functioned, he played the role of a dayan. But at the same time, in issuing his verdict, he testifies to the fact that Rabbi Yossi Aglili, in a certain situation of Tokel Chaver Biosno, had the assailant, the Tokel, the Mavayish, pay 400 mana tsori. So that's going to be a problem. Again, it's a little bit off on the side of Eid Nasa Dayan or Ein Eid Nasa Dayan. Meaning Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is basing his conclusion on a story that he saw, and he testified to that effect. Now Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is playing the role of an aid. Can he at the same time play the role of a dayan and paskin that so-and-so has to pay 100 zuz of manitsuri? And that's what the Gemara wants to clarify now. What does it mean when Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says, ha-ana ha-Rabbi Yossi Aglili, both myself and Rabbi Yossi Aglili, hold that this is what you have to pay. Ilei mahachi kamale. If this is what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was telling the Tokeh, the Mevayish, ha'ana dechazisach, I can testify because I saw in a different scenario when somebody blew into somebody's ear, ve'ha Rabbi Yossi aglili diomar manatzori. And I can testify about that case where the verdict was handed down by the presiding judge, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that he has to pay a monetzori. Izil Havle, monetzori. Go pay him up a monetzori. So now the Gemara has a problem because if Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is functioning as a dayan, how could he base his conclusion on Edus that he saw such and such happen? He saw that they were judging in the Bezdin of Rabbi Yossi Aglili a case of Tokea, and Rabbi Yossi Aglili paskin that he has to pay him a mona tsori. Lememar di eid nasa dayan. Can we derive, is it valid to derive the conclusion that an individual, based on Rabbi Danasi here, and the chiyuv tashlumin of mona tsori in Boshes, that a person could wear two hats, he could simultaneously play two roles. He can play the role of being an aid, and he can play a role of being a dayan. It means that the dayan himself could issue his psak based on what he himself saw and what he testifies to. Is that really poshut? Is that so? For Sanya, didn't we learn in a brisa? This is at the end of Rosh Hashanah. It says, with regard to dayanim of Sanhedrin, shero echad shaharigas hanefesh. The crime actually took place in the presence of Sanhedrin. So Rabbi Tarfa wants to know whether or not these members of Sanhedrin can now function as dayanim. Is miktsasim nasu eda miktsasim nasu dayanim? We have to split them into groups. Some of them have to be edim, and others have to play a role as dayanim. And some of these ex-dayanim, so to speak, I mean, they're still dayanim, obviously, but they will testify in front of other dayanim. But in that case, they're not functioning as dayanim, but rather functioning as edim. Rabbi Kiva omer kulam edim heim v'ein eid nasa dayan. If they all saw the maisa because the murder, or whatever it was, took place in their presence, then they all have to disqualify themselves as dayanim. Not one of those members of Sanhedrin could function as a dayan. And if we speak back to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi in the case of Tokel Chavero, where Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi testifies that this story, this scenario took place in front of the Bezdin of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and the psak was monetzuri, he has to give him monetzuri, then what we have is an overlap, and that's okay, according to Rabbi Akiva, because Kula made him. Even though they saw the Maisa, they can still become Dayanim. Gemara wants to arrive at the following conclusion in explaining this Kasha, that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, cannot be squared, certainly not with Rabbi Akiva, who says Kulam Nasim Eidim, and they can't be Dayonim, but not even with Rabbi Tarfon. Even though Rabbi Tarfon splits the group into half. Some become Dayonim and some become Eidim, to testify in front of the Dayonim, but you see clearly that, according to Rabbi Tarfon, no one is wearing two hats over here. They're split into two groups. And again, we're going to have this difficulty. How could Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi play a double role? He's going to testify, and at the same time, he's going to issue the verdict as a Dayan. And the Gemara says the following, if you want to tell me that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi reflects and embraces the sheet of Rabbi Tarfon, which means, Ad Sheroas HaMaisa Yochel Lios Dayan, I'm sorry, Eid Shero, I said Ad, I meant to say, Eid Sheroas HaMaisa Yochel Lios Dayan, according to Rabbi Tarfon, the aid can function as a dayan. No, Ad Kan Lo Komer Rabbi Tarfon. He doesn't disagree with Rabbi Akiva that in principle Ein Aid Nasa Dayan. He's only suggesting Ella the Miktsasa Nasu Aidim, Miktsasa Machirim Nasu Dayanim. In other words, it's since the Dayanim are not testifying, therefore they don't play that double role and they're not Aidim. That's why Rabbi Tarfon holds you can split them up, and some of those witnesses will serve as witnesses and others as dayanim. Avol, but eid, if the person is testifying in Bezdin, nasa dayan, he can then become a dayan to paskin on the basis of his own eidus. Lo ka'amai, Rabbi Tarfon himself didn't go that far. So basically, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who says, Hine Anisha Risich, I can tell you that he has to pay 100 zuz of Manatsuri, that itself does injustice to the principle of Ein Eid Nasa Dayon, that once you're an Eid Befal, which means in actuality you're actually testifying in front of Bezdin, you can't turn around and say, I want to function as a Dayon. You can't wear those both hats simultaneously. And that's something that even Rabbi Tarfon agrees to. So Gemara answers, no, you have to reinterpret this braisa, and specifically Rabbi Tarfon. And that is Kitanya Hahi, the subject of this braisa was Kigon Sharo Balaila. The goal here again is even Rabbi Tarfon would agree that an Eid Hamed is not able to function in the capacity of a dayan. But what happened? These Eidim would not be functioning as Dayanim. Kigon Shero Balaila. The story happened at night. The Lola Mevad Dina Ninhu. At night, there's no Shaychus Eidus. In other words, the time for din is during the day, and that din, that judgment can be based upon Re'iyas Laila, and the Re'iyah is equivalent to Kabolas Eidus of din, that's called din, that's the beginning of the process of din. But the Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, Ain't done in Balaila. El Biyom. There's no such thing as din of judgment during the nighttime period. It's only during the daytime period. So, at this point, although what they saw at night is something they can rely upon tomorrow, the next day, when they testify in front of Beis Din during the daylight hours, the fact that they saw this event happening at night, that itself forces a split between two groups. There are those who saw it who will play the role as Eidim, and those who saw it who play the role not as Eidim, but as Dayonim. But again, the issue here is, do we need a Haggadah Eidus? And if that Haggadah Eidus, which again has to take place by day, because there's no Din Balaila, and Haggadah Eidus is the beginning of Din, so we require day for Haggadah Eidus, then basically what they saw at night is not valid it's not valid in and of itself. There's going to have to be a testimony, a Maisa Haggadah, on what they saw at night during the day, the following morning. However, if, let's say, they saw the Maisa Bayom on the daylight, then Rabbi Tarfon would agree that what they saw by day does not in any way derail them or undermine their status as Dayanim. They can serve as Dayanim on that Maisa, and they will hand down a judgment based on what they saw. And that's called Lotei Shmiya Gedola Miriya. What they saw, they don't even need Agadas Eidus. So basically, when you need Agadas Eidus because the Riyah was Balaila, then we have to separate between the Eidim and the Dayanim. But in the case where they saw the Maisa happen, somebody killed somebody in their presence, and they saw it, they can go ahead and hand down a judgment based on what they saw. They don't need Agadas Eidus. Why? Because during the day, since they're royal Agadas Eidus, therefore, even without testifying, that knowledge that they have is enough for giving down handing down a judgment, and they don't need a Haggadah. And that's Rabbi Tarfon's unique shita, which Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi adopts. According to Rabbi Tarfon, what they saw during the day does not disqualify them as Dayanim. And why is that so? Because what they saw during the day doesn't require a Haggadah. Let someone else be a Magid. But that person who saw the Maisa Bayom is able to sit in judgment and hand down a verdict like any other Dayan. It means that according to Rabbi Tarfon, we don't always have to split. You can have a situation where what you saw can be the springboard for your final verdict as a Dayan. But that's only in the case where you saw it during the day, and that seeing could be part of the judgment process. It's as we said before, it's Tchilas Hadin, and it's Bayom, it's part of being Dayan. There's no need to explicate, to explicitly recite and record and testify in front of the Beis Din. No, he now can play the role as a Dayan. And this comes back to the case of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. He embraced the sheet of Rabbi Tarfon, and therefore, since he saw the Maisa during the day, he could serve as a Dayan as well. How do we know he saw the Maisa during the day? And the answer is Rabbi Yosef Glili. Rabbi Yosef Glili had this case of Tokei L'chaver Rabbi Ozno, and he paskin that he has to pay Mea Zuzi Kesef Tzorui. Mona Tzorui, or Zuz Tzorui. And how is Rabbi Yosef Glili, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi able to do so? Because he saw or heard personally what Rabbi Yossi HaGlili paskined in the case of Tokel Chaver Biozno. He doesn't have to repeat that testimony, because the knowledge that he has is something that's related to Yom, and therefore you don't require a separate Haggadah Eidus and apply the principle of Ein Eid Nasa Dayan. The Yibayisema, the Gemara wants to offer another interpretation. Hachi Kamrala. This is what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was saying to the Tokeh, to the Mimvayish. Ha'anas virulei ki Rabbi Yosef Glili, I accept the sheet of Rabbi Yosef Glili, the Omar, mona tzori. V'asahadi, demesadi bach, izil havlei mona tzori. What, according to this second Lishna, what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was saying regarding Tokeh l'chavero, was that I myself adopt the sheet of Rabbi Yosef Glili, and the penalty therefore the tashlum should be mana tzori, mana tzori, and for hasahadi the mesadi bach. And what about the witnesses that are testifying that they saw the maisa happen? Izil havle mana tzori. Wasn't that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was functioning as an aide? He was just saying that I agree with Rabbi Yosef Glili, and Rabbi Yosef Glili is of the opinion that a tokel chaver has to pay a mana tzori. Here are two aidim that testify that you blew someone into someone's ear, or you banged them on the ear. go, zeal, havle, monetzori, pay up a monetzori. The Gemara now goes back to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva holds that an aide who saw the Maisa cannot function as a dayan. Ain aid naisa dayan. So the Gemara asks, Sama Rabbi Akiva, the ain aid naisa dayan, is that really so? Vasanya, we learned in the Braisa, with regard to Chovel b'chaver, it says, Vehika ish esreyeu b'even over egrov v'lo yavos v'nafal l'mishkov. This pasuk is going to be the basis for Umdana, when Bezdin are in charge of figuring out whether the murder weapon actually had the capacity to kill this individual. And the way to interpret this pasuk is totally in the following dialogue between Rabbi Akiva and Shimon HaTimni. Shimon says, Shimon HaTimni, Ma Egrof, why did the Torah add the extra word Egrof? He could have just easily have omitted it, and nothing would be lost to the Pshat. Is Egrof is Miyuchad, Shemasur Li Eda Vila Edim. Is Ma Mar Egrof Miyuchad, is Afkol Shemasur Li Eda Uli Edim. Prat liyotzisa mitachas yad ha'edim. According to Shimon HaTimni, what is the word egrof, the extra word in this pasuk coming to teach me? It's got to be like an egrof. The egrof is a paradigm of something that's masur liyedu liyedim, meaning, you bring the egrof into Beis Din, and Beis Din, together with the Edom, can do what we call an Umdana. They can shot something, they can evaluate if this Chavala was enough to perhaps kill the victim, or at least damage him in the way he was damaged. And the Chovel will have to pay damages to make Chavala based on the Nezek. But if it's not Dumya, if it's not similar to Egrov, which means that there is no possibility of doing an umdana, and we don't know if the blow that the chovel served to the nechbal was strong enough, etc., etc., to kill or to damage the nechbal in the way that he was damaged. In such a case, says Shimon HaTimni, no payment. He goes scot-free. Why? The mazik doesn't have to pay the nizik dmei chavola, because what happened to the Nizak is a result not of the blow and the power, the energy force of the Mazik, but rather it was due to the Nizak himself. He was very weak in composition, and that's why he suffered so. Is Afkol Shemos Uliedim, so too in every Mazik, what we have to do is we have to bring in the weapon into Beis Din, and the Dayanim could turn to the Edom and say to them, well, is this the murder weapon, or the Mazik weapon, the damaging weapon? And once the Edom testify to that object, now Beis Din will look at that object, they'll research it, and they will determine whether or not that object could have actually engendered such a Mazik, such a Hezek. And if not, then it's there's a Pturia. He's only Chayav Mashachaval, he's only chayav in the case where we have clear-cut umdana. We have a clear-cut umdana where Beis Din can look at the evidence number one, and it's the murder weapon, whichever it is, and they can determine, yeah, this murder weapon would have and could have very well killed the victim. Prat Lit, and the lamed is referring to Evan, a stone. She yotzesa mitachas yad ha'ed. Let's say that the Edim saw that Ploni threw an Evan on Talmoni, but the Evan got lost, and it cannot be exhibited in Beis Din in order to make that umdana. And we really are in the dark here whether or not that object, in this case that Evan, was powerful enough to be Mazik the Nezek. Maybe it wasn't. And therefore, Ein Mechayvenes HaMazik, we cannot force the Mazik to pay. Why? Because whatever the Eidim saw, we want to see the actual evidence. We're not going to rely on their understanding of what went on. They heard a, you know, a loud noise. I don't know what went on. But rather, Bezin has to do, the Dayanim of Bezin have to implement the Umdara, which means they have to make all the calculations, the evaluations, that which the Mazik dealt to the Nizak was Yecholah Lahazik. It had the capacity of doing this damage. Now, on one level, it would seem that Shimon HaTimni is saying something which is intuitively logical and almost simple. We know in all cases, if the plaintiff sues the defendant, it's the burden of proof is on the shoulders of the plaintiff to prove that indeed this chavala was strong enough, was powerful enough to do the damage that it did. In order to do so, we have to produce the murder weapon itself. And, okay, makes sense, you know, you add a tag to the murder weapon that says that this is going to serve as evidence such that the umdara can be made and determine that Plony actually was responsible for the death of Almoni. That's called umdara. Rabbi Akiva says, what do you mean? You're going to bring the murder weapon in, the Evan, and if there is no Evan, then the whole deal is off, there's no Umdana. V'chi bezdin, v'chi b'fnei bezdin hiko, sheyodim kama hiko, v'alma hiko. Did this assault or murder take place in the presence of bezdin, that they know exactly how hard he hit him, and they can make a perfect Umdana? Where in the body did he penetrate? Did he bludgeon the guy? Did he hit him on the shok? Did he hit him on the yad, on the regel? Where did he hit him? And all these questions will be answered through the umdana of Bezdin, because the murder or the attack took place in the presence of Bezdin. Oh, tzipar nafsho, perhaps he hit him on the heart, which is the lifeblood that's going to keep him alive. Okay. That makes sense, that Bezdin has to clarify this, but it seems almost ridiculous. You know, how are you going to possibly create or achieve such an umdana? V'od, he says, Hare shedochaf eschavero mirosh hagag o mirosh habira, he pushed him off a high roof, mess, and the victim died. So what are we going to say here? This is a rhetorical question. Is Bezdin holchim etzel bira? Oh, bira holeches etzel Bezdin. A little cute joke over here. What are we going to require that Bezdin leave their chambers? They have to go to this high gag, high bira, and they have to make an umdana based on the height of the push-off point, you know, of the roof, whether or not the person fell and died as a result of that, that fall. Oh, perhaps if the Bezdin don't have to get up out of their seats in the chambers, but because they have a right to stay put, we can still achieve the same goal. Is Bira Holeches Eitzel Bezdin? Let the beer itself come and come in front of the Bezdin, and they'll make the umdana. I mean, this is really ridiculous. I mean, well, how far are you requiring Bezdin? You know, maybe in Lahavdil, in secular courts, civil courts, they have something called expert witnesses. You know, they're the expert in their field. But the halacha doesn't rely on expert witnesses. So therefore, what are we going to have to do? We have to make sure that the murder weapon was brought into Bezdin, or that the height of the roof from which he threw him off was great enough to cause his death, so we got to bring the beds. Then they have to be this frolicking, movable judges. Im nafla. Let's assume, for example, that nafla took place before the Edom saw anything. Meaning, let's say this bira, or the building with the gag, collapsed. So what are we going to say here? Chozer Ubono, we're going to have to rebuild the collapsed wall in order to judge whether or not the person, Reuven, who pushed Shimon off, gave a push from such a high place that it caused the death of Shimon. Okay, that's fine as long as the building or the gag is standing, but when it collapses, what are you going to do? Says Rabbi Kiva, are you going to rebuild the walls? Is this all part of the Chovas HaDayanim in order to create the Umdara that's necessary and put the accused to death in the case of a murder? Ella, says Rabbi Kiva, for sure you don't need all of this. We don't have to go through all these evaluations and determine that the murder weapon was powerful enough, or the height of this beer was great enough to cause his death. Fascinating. We don't need expert witnesses. We just want the witnesses to tell us the story. Who killed whom? And if that's what they tell us, the testimony is that includes this evaluation, this umdana. We saw Reuven damaging Shimon, injuring Shimon. We know that it was Reuven who did it to Shimon. And whatever force and energy or height from which he pushed, whatever the case may be, we, the Aiden, testify that he killed him or he damaged him, he injured him. So what are you going to do with the pasuk of Egrov? There was a superfluous word, Egrov. Ma Egrov miyuchad, says Rabbi Akiva, shu masurli Aidim. Af kolshu masurli Aidim, prat likshayotza even mitachas yodo shalmaka. What's masurli Aidim? Meaning the Aidim could see and witness the event of Reuven injuring Shimon. They see what weapon Reuven used to destroy Shimon. And they know that exactly is what happened. That A caused B, and the person, the victim, died as a result of this egrov. And that's called masurli Aidim. What does that mean, masurli Aidim? The Aidim know how hard he hit him, with what oomph and what pressure he put on, and so forth and so on. But the Torah says that there is some exception to the rule, and that exception to the rule is prat l'kshayotza even mitachas yodo shalmaka. In other words, the even, in this case the murder weapon, was completely lost directly or immediately after the hakah, and the Edom did not see it, therefore they cannot judge how much it's worth. And as a result of that, in other words, the Edom could only say Yotza Evan Mitachas Yodo. They saw that, from a distance, that this Maka was throwing an Evan, but they couldn't see and evaluate the Evan. It was Yotza Mitachas Yodo V'Nevad, and it was lost immediately after that call. The Edom themselves are perplexed. They didn't see the Evan. They're not sure if that Evan really, with David and Goliath, he hit him with a small stone. Is it possible that this caused the death or not? They don't know. The Edom can't tell you. It's Yotza Evan and Nevada Evan. And therefore, Patur, the so-called attacker, is exempt from punishment. We cannot make any evaluation. But again, Rabbi Akiva insists that we don't have to have the murder weapon in front of us because we're going to rely on the Edom. But if the Edom themselves say that we couldn't see the whole thing, we wanted to go and look at the Evan, but it was gone, it was Nevad, he's potter. Is Ketani Mias. In any event, it says in the Braisa, Omer Rabbi Akiva v'chib ifnei Bezdeniko. Did this murder take place in the presence of the Dayanim of Bezdin? Sheyodim Kamaiko. They know how much exactly he what was the nature of the blow that he dealt to the muke? Is ha'iko b'fneem? Is ha'ed nase dayon? Rabbi Akiva is saying that if this murder took place in the presence of Bezdin knows exactly, and they could put him to death. They could condemn him for the death sentence. And that's a case of Bifnei Bezdin Hiko. Akiva's words strongly imply that had this murder taken place in front of Bezdin, then Eid Nasa Dayan, that Enochinami, he, the aide, can become a witness. And for the Gemara, that's not Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Rabbi Akiva maintains, Ein aid nasa dayan. You cannot wear two hats. Lidvarv de Rabbi Shimon HaTimni komer. He was only speaking within the context of Rabbi Shimon HaTimni. And the fact that this hakah did not take place in front of Bezdin, and therefore they can't make the umdana, is less lay low svirle. The Diyuk here in Rabbi Akiva's words that had the Dayanim actually witnessed, had the Hakah happened b'fneim, they could judge him. That's only according to Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva hits him with a barrage of questions. Well, you know, how did Bezdin know to make this umdun and determine beyond a shadow of a doubt that the murder weapon was such, or the situation, the details of the scenario of the murder was such that it definitely was going to happen, and it has nothing to do with any sort of weakness on the part of the Nerag or the Nechbal. But Lelo Svirale, Rabbi Akiva himself doesn't hold like that. He doesn't accept that if the Hakad took place in front of the Dayanim and they could judge him, they have the capacity now and the role to play as Eidim, and an Eid cannot play simultaneously the role of Dayanim. I would just like to add, as we end this sugya here, that Ein Eid Nasa Dayan, I think, is what's called a Psul HaGuf. What do I mean? Logically, one could say a Kal V'Chomer, if Tzedek Tzedek Tiridof, the purpose of the Din, is that Bezdin come to the truth, and their verdict is truth, if Bezdin themselves, made up of Dayanim who saw the event, they witnessed the crime, how much more so can they achieve truth? We know now in this case, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the psak, the verdict that was handed down by this Bezdin, is absolutely true. They're not relying on anyone else. They know it themselves. They themselves witnessed the event. So therefore, I think the psul of Ein Eid Nasa Dayan is a technical psul, psul aguf. There are two separate categories or groups. One group plays the role of Eidim, and they testify in front of Dayanim, but you can't sit on both sides of the table at the same time. You can't be the teacher and the pupil. You can't be the witness and the judge. Those are two separate things, and therefore an Eid is possible technically. The other way of saying is that, you know what? If the Eidim, if the Dayanim saw they witnessed the crime, they didn't go through any objective, you know, clarification, investigation. They're going to issue their psak, and they're not hearing anything from the outside. In a sense, they from the very moment that this action took place, they already judged the Baal HaMais as a rotzeach. They're not going to be open to new ideas and looking out of the box. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here. And Belineda, the next year, we'll start with Tana Rabbanan, which is 3 6 lines up from the bottom of the page.